Hey, amigos, you know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Welcome, friend. Glad to see you made it, even with all the holiday hullabaloo. You get all your shopping done yet? See, I've got just a thing for that one person in your life who's impossible to shop for. The Splittail Files book. Not only does it look great on top of anyone's toilet tank, but you can also be assured that you've bought a product that was made with love. And isn't that what Christmas is all about? Yes, Chester, Christmas is also about fruitcake to some extent. You know, you gotta be the only creature on Earth who actually eats that shit. Let's head in, friend. And remember, leave a review on the Splittail Files. We'll read it on the show. So don't be afraid to get silly. Alright. Also, check out simplyscarypodcast.com. $7.99 a month and you get our whole catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. Not a bad gift either, when you think about it. Give the gift of ad-free horror this season. Become a CTFDN patron today. So tonight, we've got a story from author Ryan Major by way of Velox Books. In this one, an astronaut who suffered a stroke gets cryptid messages from the cosmos. So without further delay, from author Ryan Major, I give you Blanketed in the Stars. She will come to me, blanketed in the stars. I can't tell you how many times I heard those words over the last decade. My father, Raymond Chandler, suffered a massive stroke and developed motor aphasia. He couldn't say anything else afterward, just those 9 words, over and over. Well, I guess that isn't entirely true. He said something else at the end. But I'll get to that later. Mom and Dad worked for NASA when I was a kid. Both had completed multiple missions into space, and Mom had served on the International Space Station. She died there, as a matter of fact. Clara Chandler was the first person in the station's history to lose their life while stationed there. During a routine maintenance check on some of the external communication equipment, her tether came loose and she drifted into the darkness of space. The result of poor safety checks, according to the final report. I was too young to understand exactly what happened, but old enough to understand that she was never coming home. Dad did the best he could raising me as a single parent, but I don't think he ever took the time to take care of himself after she died. Even at a young age, I could tell he was aging too rapidly. His hair color faded, the skin on his face creased deeply, and he rarely slept. Still, he was a loving man.
Do you think Mom was scared?
I asked one night as my father tucked me into bed.
When she floated away, was she scared?
My father smiled that sad smile I came to know all too well. His hand stroked the top of my head, and he placed a stuffed bear next to me on my pillow. "No," he said gently. Tears pooled in the corners of his eyes. "Your mother was a brave woman. Before you were born, we would sit outside and look at the stars long into the night. Nothing made her happier. Now she is with the stars. I think she was very happy that she was able to stay there." Dad suffered an ischemic stroke in 2012, just 4 days before his 58th birthday. What a gift, right? He remained in a coma for nearly a month. I don't want to dredge up all my memories of his recovery process, but I'll say this. It was rough. Most of his physicians believed he would stay in a catatonic state for the rest of his life. Regaining his ability to move independently seemed unlikely, even if he did wake. Speech? That would be gone too, according to the same doctors. Day after day, I would sit at his bedside and read to him. Thriller and detective novels, mostly. He was always so busy with work or taking care of me that he didn't have much time for leisure reading. Tons of professional journals and reference books, but rarely a good piece of fiction. That didn't stop him from picking up a hardback and adding it to his never-ending retirement reading pile. The silence of the first few visits was near maddening, so I began to pull a book from the towering stack every few days and read it to him. Some of the nurses said they thought he would hear it. An anchor, some of them called it. I don't know if I believed it worked, but it helped fill the crippling silence of his sterile hospital room. After finishing up our fifth or sixth detective noir, I closed the book and slid it onto the table beside him. Looking at him, I saw his chest rising and falling shallowly. His color was ashen and his weight was dropping. A feeding tube ran into his nose and his body was a maze of wires and adhesive pads. With tears in my eyes, I took his frail hand in mine and squeezed it. "Gotta head home, Dad," I whispered. "I love you." As I began to place his hand back on the white blanket, I felt his muscle tighten around my hand. He squeezed my fingers weakly. Both of his eyes were open lazily and gazed into mine. A croaking noise erupted from his throat. Dry coughs caused his body to shudder. He was trying to talk, but his mouth was too dry. In a panic, I fumbled to the bedside table for a bottle of thickened water. Some stroke victims have difficulty swallowing, so the nurses left the bottle in the event he woke up. Holding it to his mouth, he took small sips and smacked the roof of his mouth with his tongue. A wet cough exploded and I used the Kleenex to wipe spittle away from the corners of his mouth.
"She will come to me, blanketed in the stars,"
he said so quietly I barely heard him. I punched the call button beside his bed to alert the nurse. My pulse hammered and my vision began to swim. Dad began looking around the hospital room with panic-filled eyes as I tried to calm him.
"What?"
I said, my heart thundering in my chest.
"I couldn't understand you, Dad."
He gripped my hand even more tightly and pulled me toward him. His sudden burst of strength startled me. I leaned in closely, placing my ear to his mouth. Hot breath and wheezing filled my ear.
"She will come to me, blanketed in the stars."
As he spoke the words, The bright fluorescent lights above the bed sizzled and burned away. After Dad was released from the hospital, I took over as his full-time caretaker. My work as a home health care nurse made for an easy, if not uncomfortable, transition. His recovery, for the most part, had been incredible. All his range of motion returned. He could walk on his own. His vision was as good as it had been before the stroke. Basic tasks like tying his shoes and getting dressed presented no issues. The only lasting effects were reduced hemiparesis, or weakness, on his right side and his inability to communicate anything other than those 9 words. His aphasia never improved. "She will come to me," blanketed in the stars. His doctor said it was uncommon, but not unheard of. How a stroke damages the brain is different for each person. "The ability to form and speak full thoughts may return. It could be weeks or even years," the doctor told us. "Or it may never improve." It never did. My father could only rattle off that single phrase. He would say it with different voice inflections to express his mood. I didn't always understand what he wanted, but I knew if he was happy or sad. Anger was the easiest emotion to figure out. It could be incredibly frustrating, but I did my best to remain patient and understanding. For a brief time, we thought he may be able to write or to communicate his thoughts, but it proved fruitless. Anytime you gave him a dry erase board or a pad of paper, he wrote those same 9 words over again. "She will come to me," blanketed in the stars. Slowly, things returned to normal in his life. As normal as you can expect for someone who loses their ability to speak coherently anyway. Our daily routine hit a stride, and he was largely the man I remembered as a child. The new normal didn't last long. Dad started using chalk to draw enormous star maps on every inch of the walls. The massive designs eventually covered every available inch of empty space. As he ran out of room to expand his comprehensive work, he would remove framed photos and paintings from the wall and stack them in the center of the room. When he started, I was confused and concerned about the activity. When I say he was drawing star maps, I don't mean he would work in one area of the house until he completed a portion. He would stare at the wall for a half hour before placing a single dot. As soon as he had finished, he would walk to another room and repeat the process. Hundreds of times a day, maybe more. After a wall was sufficiently covered in tiny white dots, I waited until he went to bed one evening and decided to clean the walls. I filled a bucket full of warm water and used a soft sponge to remove the markings. It took me hours to wash them away and return the photos and paintings to their original positions. When I was finished, some of my anxiety diminished. The next morning, when Dad saw his work was gone, he was furious.
"She will come to me!"
he shouted as he stomped around the living room, gesturing toward the newly cleaned walls.
"Blanketed in the stars!"
"Dad,"
I pleaded.
"They were little chalk dots. Let's go in the kitchen and have some breakfast, huh?"
He stormed back to his bedroom and slammed the door. I could hear him crying as I knocked, but he didn't answer. He didn't come out for the rest of the day, as I recall. Just sat in his room whimpering and muttering those same 9 maddening words. As a peace offering, I drove to the store that afternoon while he napped and purchased him a box of chalk. It hadn't occurred to me that although his artwork on the walls didn't make sense to me, it could be very meaningful to him. I made a note to be less careless with his feelings. It did the trick. The next morning, when he came out of his room, I handed him the box of chalk.
"I'm sorry,"
I said sincerely.
"It's your house. If you want to draw on the walls, then that's okay. I shouldn't have taken it down."
He gazed down at the box in his hand and smiled.
"She will come to me, blanketed in the stars?"
he said questioningly.
"Sure, Dad,"
I responded. "Blanketed in the stars." Over the next few years, Dad filled the walls with enormous star maps. His pace had quickened, and soon the charts bent around the door frames and continued into the adjacent room. Some days he would pull huge books from his office and show me photographs of the constellations and formations as he repeated those echoing words. I knew in his mind he was explaining to me in great detail which celestial bodies his drawings represented, so I would nod along. He looked so happy, content even in his weakened state. But all I heard were those words, "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars." 8 years after the stroke, and Dad's health was starting to take a turn for the worse again. He had a difficult time getting out of bed in the mornings. Standing for a long period was out of the question. His memory seemed to be slipping a bit, though it could be hard to tell with his limited speech. He forgot to shave, which had been a religious part of his daily routine. More often than I could count, I would catch him staring blankly into space. The buttons on his shirt would be undone at random intervals. His tidy demeanor shifted slowly into clutter and forgetfulness. Still, he added to his star charts and maps. That was also when the light bulbs started to burn out rapidly. Just one at first, the hallway light outside of his bedroom. I would put a fresh bulb in, and within 2 or 3 days, the filament inside would be no more than 2 charred prongs. Heavy ash coated the inside of the bulbs. It wasn't long before the light bulbs began frequently burning out throughout the house. My weekly grocery trip always included a few packs of incandescent bulbs. I told myself the old-style bulbs may be the problem, and we switched to LEDs, but it only lasted a day or two longer. You never realize how expensive light bulbs can be until you start buying them 2 dozen at a time. After my frustration hit a melting point, I had multiple electricians come to the house and check the wiring multiple times in the following weeks. They would spend hours checking the sockets, but never found any issues. 6 electricians told me everything worked just like it should. Not a problem in sight. Bulbs continued to burn out. The pace quickened. It grew more common to let them sit dimmed in the sockets for a day or two before I would change them. With Dad's mobility dropping off, we stopped spending as much time at the house. A few hours on the porch to combat seasonal depression, but otherwise we stayed in. Where we used to take daily walks or travel to the planetarium, he would spend most of the day reading a book quietly in his armchair, or staring off into space. His work on the star maps grew less consistent. I spent most of my day in front of the television. While I was a great student, I never developed the same love for reading that my parents had. Binging TV shows broke up the monotony of the quiet house when I wasn't busy taking care of my father. Most nights, I would fall asleep in the dim blue illumination of the flat screen. Some nights, I would wake up to see the glow of the TV hitting the tiny chalk dots on the wall. It almost made the little spots sparkle like the night sky, as though my father's artwork had come to life and embodied the very celestial landscape that danced above us. It was in the cascade of light from the television that I first started to see the sinister shapes. I knew it was my imagination, but thin lines seemed to grow between some of the stars. They came together to form the faintest outline of something that made my blood run cold. Sleek, hunched, and snarling creatures made of tiny chalk dots seemed to prowl on the illuminated walls. The sounds of crackling plaster and groaning wood filled my ears. A chill would build at the base of my spine as it crawled up to my neck, as though I were an unwitting animal in the sights of an apex predator. When I would turn the lamp on beside me, the half-dream figures would vanish. Nothing left but the white field of stars. I think my father felt it too. On those nights, I would hear him call out in panic. Cries of terror would fill the silence of the evenings. When I would enter the room, he would be pointing madly from wall to wall and screaming those same 9 words.
She will come to me, blanketed in the stars!
Whenever he grew panicked, I would have to sit beside his bed until he fell asleep again. The bedside lamp would always have a burned-out bulb, so I would change it. Even if I left some of the other bulbs unchanged, I never let my father sit in the dark. He would hold my hand as he drifted off. It felt so much like when I was a child crying over how much I missed my mother. Dad would hold my hand in the dim lamplight then and whisper to me about how Mom was so happy among the stars. On the morning of my father's final day, I think I knew it was near the end. For most of the days leading up to it, he seemed to be filled with fear. He rarely slept unless I sat beside him, hand in hand. If I didn't sleep in the chair next to him, I almost always found him on the floor the next morning. He hadn't fallen. No. He would slip out of bed and return to his work on the walls. There he would be, clutching a dwindling piece of chalk, crumpled on the floor next to the wall. For the past few weeks, he had been scrawling away at an ornate rectangle. It was beautiful and haunting all at once, like the recording of a lost loved one's voice. It looked almost like a door, though it was nearly 9 feet tall. Delicate loops and swirls filled the space between the thick white border. Lighter shades of gray covered the inside, carefully smudged inch by inch by my father's shaking hand. He never worked on it during the day, only during the night, and only when I wasn't in the room. I purchased a baby monitor to place in his room for the nights when I was able to sleep in my bed. The first few times I saw him wobbled across the floor to work on the door, I had run to the room and tried to put him back to bed. But he would become so agitated that I thought we would come to blows. No matter how many times I carried him back to bed, I would see him again on the screen, working away at the door. The rest of his room was covered in more unsettling work. What had once been a field of white chalk stars now had faint lines connecting them. They came together to form vague outlines of the horrific creatures I always dreamt of. I never saw my father draw them, but they changed frequently. Occasionally, I was tempted to wipe them from the wall while he was out of the room, but I remembered how angry he became the last time I removed his work. As much as I hated them, I left the half-formed beast to prowl amongst the chalk stars. That morning, when I entered my father's room, he was sitting in his armchair. His head was tipped back, and his robe was drooped open at his sides. When I first saw him, I thought he had passed away in the night. My heart ached for a moment until I saw him stir.
"She will come to me,"
he said groggily.
"Blanketed in the stars."
"Good morning, Dad," I said. "Breakfast is ready."
We ate together in the kitchen. Well, I ate. Dad picked at his breakfast and shoveled down a few mouthfuls of eggs. He hadn't been eating well for weeks and was beginning to look sickly thin. His doctor recommended IV nutrition if his eating didn't improve, and I was sure that would be the next step. Usually, we would sit on the porch after breakfast, but he got up from the table and shambled on shaken legs back to his bedroom and crawled beneath the covers. The sound of snoring soon poured out of his bedroom. For a few moments, I considered trying to stir him, to take him outside for some sunlight, but he seemed so frail, I decided to let him rest. Sometime in the afternoon, I must have drifted off. When I woke up, I could see the streetlights flowing in through the windows. Pulling the cord on the lamp beside me, I wasn't surprised to find the bulb was burnt out. Walking groggily to the wall, I flipped the light switch to discover it was also burned out. I was heading toward the cupboard in the kitchen for some fresh bulbs when I heard my father scream. Rushing to his bedroom, I twisted the knob to find it locked. I began to bang on the door, calling my father's name, but he didn't answer. My ears were filled with his panicked screams and the sound of things falling to the floor.
"Dad!"
I shouted.
"Dad, unlock the door! You've got to let me in!"
More screaming and the sound of heavy footsteps. I threw my weight against the door, but the thick wood didn't budge. The hinges would rattle, but the door never gave way. Still, the sound of terror inside persisted. Sweat began to run down my neck from the effort. My phone was still beside the recliner in the living room, so I ran back to grab it and call 911. As I reached to pick it up, I looked at the screen of the baby monitor, and my heart nearly stopped. My father sat in his bed, blankets pulled up to his chin, shivering violently. His eyes darted side to side at the walls. Glowing orbs that had once been chalk stars danced along the walls as they bulged and rippled. Something beside the plaster and paint was pushing against them, trying to break through. Abandoning my phone, I ran to the garage and tumbled down the steps, landing hard on the concrete floor. My head was swimming, but I managed to push myself back onto my feet. Darting toward the tool bench, I found my father's old hatchet and ran back to his bedroom door. Blow after blow with the hatchet rained down from above my head. Flecks of paint and chunks of wood peppered my face as I carved away at the door. Inside, I could still hear my father screaming, but now it was mingled with a guttural rumbling that filled my heart with dread. After a few moments, I made a hole large enough to put my hand through. Shoving my hand inside, I swatted blindly for the door latch. The rumbling had swollen into deafening roars, completely covering my father's screams of horror. My hand found the lock and twisted it, allowing the door to swing in. I could see my father reaching toward me, eyes filled with terror. He was screaming something, but I couldn't hear him against the crackling of plaster and splintering of wooden beams. I didn't need to hear him to know what he was saying. "She will come to me, blanketed in the stars." Dozens of dull lights pulsed as they pushed themselves through the wall, tumbling to the floor. They rolled like bowling balls before coming to a stop. The strange sound from the walls fell silent as the orbs began to convulse. Slowly, they began to move toward each other, before melting into an enormous sphere. My father and I stared in awe for a moment at the ball of light. I was about to call for Dad to come with me when the ball cracked like an egg, falling to pieces on the floor. Standing in its place was something unlike anything I'd ever seen. A creature made of small stars stretched its back and shook its head from side to side. Delicate lines flowed between each of the illuminated dots, forming the nightmarish beast. Heavy claws sank into the floor as it craned its neck toward me. Two red orbs in the sea of white met my gaze before the thing erupted in another guttural roar. I raised the hatchet above my head, but the thing swung a massive foot toward me and connected with my head. The hatchet dropped from my hand as I sailed through the air, crashing against the wall by the ornate door my father had drawn. The air ejected from my lungs and I began desperately gasping for breath. The thing turned back toward my father and lowered its stance as it began to move toward him. He screamed and thrashed in the bed as the celestial demon crept closer. It seemed to be preparing to lunge for him, when suddenly the room was filled with intense light. I looked to my side and saw brilliant beams pouring from the outline of the door. The light danced and erupted through the delicate latticework my father had drawn. All around us, the air was filled with a sensation of serenity. Even the beast turned to look. The ornate door pushed open, flooding the room with overwhelming warmth and light. I wanted to cover my eyes, but the sight was too beautiful, and I couldn't turn away. On the floor at the foot of my father's bed, the celestial abomination began to roar and writhe in pain as the light from the door washed over it. I looked away from the opening to see the creature melting into a pool of illumination. The waves of warmth and light from the door had driven it back to wherever it had come from, leaving the room in silence. I turned back to the door. A woman walked out and into the bedroom. She was so tall, over 8 feet. Her body was slender and agile. Her smile, beautiful and serene. Draped over her shoulders and fallen to the floor was a silver shawl. Lights danced and sparkled over every inch, shining like stars in the night sky. Blanketed in the stars. Leaning down toward me, she placed her hand on my chest and my struggling lungs filled with air. Every ache and pain in my body faded. The sense of fear and dread washed away, and I felt suddenly calm. She smiled at me, caressed my face, and walked toward my father's bed. I looked toward him. He had thrown the blanket to the side and was smiling at the beautiful woman. He lifted a shaking hand toward her, and she lifted hers to meet it.
"She has come for me."
Tears were streaming down his face as he gazed at the beautiful woman.
"She is blanketed in the stars." Stars.
The woman took my father's hand.
"I've missed you, Raymond.
She said in an ethereally beautiful voice.
"I do believe it's time to go. Time to go."
"Clara," he cooed, voice steady and strong.
"I knew you would come. You're as beautiful as you were in my dreams."
He stood from the bed with a certainty that had been missing for so many years. Light washed over him as he changed. The frail man my father became was no more. He looked youthful, strong. He was the man I remembered from my childhood. My mother and father walked hand in hand toward the door, stopping for only a moment before me. He smiled at me as a single tear, sparkling with starlight, rolled down his cheek. My mother bent over and caressed my face again. I put my hand over hers for just a moment as she kissed the top of my head.
I love you.
I love you.
She whispered in my ear before standing back up. My lips moved, but the words wouldn't come out. I love you, I mouthed. She smiled and nodded. They passed through the door and it sealed shut behind them. I don't know where they went, but that's okay. Wherever they are together. Blanketed in the stars. And that was Blanketed in the Stars by Ryan Major. A little about the author. Ryan Major is a writer frequently featured on the Dr. No Sleep podcast and Full Body Chills podcast from Audio Chuck. He lives in Kentucky with his wife and two sons. Hey, thanks, Ryan. And a special thanks to Velox Books, publisher of all your favorite No Sleep stars, and your source for primo nightmare fuel. Check out Ryan's book, I've Done This Before, for this tale and plenty more. Available from Velox Books in Kindle, paperback, hardcover, and audio.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. And just a little public service announcement from a certain UPS driver I know. That stupid wreath is covering the number on your door. We're trying to deliver your Split Tail Files book here. That is all. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Happy shopping, everyone. And as always, go fuck yourselves. Good night, amigos. Good night.